On this episode of the Unravel Podcast, we visit with two individuals who have consistently had a major impact on tight end Pat Freiermuth's life. That being his parents, John and Diane Freiermuth, joined us from Merrimack, Massachusetts, before the 2021 NFL draft to essentially recap his life to this point. Because what a surreal moment Pat is about to experience. So without further ado, let's get to this episode of the Unrivaled Podcast with John and Diane Freiermuth.
The alarm clock goes off in the morning. Are you going to hit the snooze button or are you going to get up and attack the deck? Compete in everything you do.
Unrivaled, the official podcast of Penn State football.
Let's dominate.
Yo, it's showtime.
Here's your host, Mitch Gerber.
John and Diane Freiermuth, our latest guest on the Unrivaled podcast, the official podcast of Penn State football. That's enough of the intro for this one. We're going to jump straight into this episode because, let's be honest, there's not a better source for Pat Freiermuth's stories than his parents. So let's jump straight in and start with this. Growing up in Merrimack, Massachusetts, a small town in Massachusetts, what was Pat like as a kid?
Pat is very, he was pretty similar to the way he is now. You probably know he just kind of does his thing and, you know, someone might tell him like he can't really do this, but he does it anyway. So he was kind of like that as a kid. He used to, we have a shed out back and he used to, we got like these little Patriot lockers, like you might, you know, like you find in a locker room. And like we had probably two or three of those in there and he had all these old uniforms. I had like some old baseball helmets, like toy helmets from when I was a kid. And he used to just, that the shed was his locker room. And he would go in there and he would change in there and he'd put on a uniform and he'd come charging out to the backyard and he, baseball, lacrosse, whatever. It didn't matter whatever season it was, that was the sport that he was into. So if it was, you know, if it was lacrosse season, he had a lacrosse uniform on, he had his helmet on, he'd be running up to the top part of the yard and he'd be playing around. So he was just a kid, you know, and there'd be times where, you know, Pat, you can go out and play, but you know, we got to leave in like 20 minutes because we got to go, you know, wherever we were going. And I would look out and like the whole yard would be a disaster. Like the uniforms would be all over the place. You know, you can't make a mess. And he would make a mess, and, you know. So he was just kind of one of those kids, like you see it. Like, and I don't think he meant to do it to be a jerk, but he just gets in the zone and just tunes everything out. And he just gets locked in. And he's been like that. He was like that when he was 3 or 4 years old. You know, it was, I mean, I remember when we used to play wiffle ball, my oldest son, Tim, he's probably like 4 years older. And we would play, like, he got to the point where we could play like one-on-one wiffle ball and Pat wasn't there yet, but he would try to come in and play. And I would just like take the bat and like toss it away. So like he'd get out of the way and he would go get the bat and he would come right back. He's like, I want to play too. I was like, bud, you can't play. Tim and I are playing. And I would toss the bat again. And he would just keep getting it and bringing it back, you know? And so he was, he's pretty similar to the way he is now, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, same for me. He was always playing a game outside, no matter what. And he, like John said, it was always, you know, it was in the shed. He'd have the warm-up tape going and he'd do his warm-ups and then he'd come back in. And it was always something like that. And it didn't matter what the sport was. And I was coaching field hockey at the time and he would come to my field hockey practices and he would play field hockey as hard as he plays football now. And he knew every girl on the team's stick, what it was, but you know, he'd warm up the goalie. So it didn't matter what the game was. He just wanted to be involved. And like John said, he would just tune everything else out and he was just focused and locked in on what he was doing.
Yeah. And he was like, and the one of the things that like, and I think he's kept this, which is pretty good. Like if you look at a lot of the players, the elite players, they had great imaginations as kids and they kept that as they got older. Like a lot of players, like they think it's corny if you have an imagination and you want to go out in the backyard and just play basketball by yourself. And, you know, and a lot of the elite players, as they move up, like they still keep that imagination. And, you know, and every time you, and I'm not obviously comparing Pat to Kobe Bryant, but like, if you look at Kobe and MJ and a lot of those great players, like they always talk about working on their game individually and going out and shooting shots and you know, imaginary playing defense, you know, someone's playing defense against them and they got to get the game winning shot off and all that stuff. And Pat has, like, he had that great imagination as a kid, and he still has that. And I think that's part of the reason why he's been able to achieve some success. You know what I mean?
Whether it was shooting a fadeaway three at the buzzer or impersonating Tom Brady in the fourth quarter, how many of those imagination scenarios played out in the front yard?
They were
every day. I mean, it's funny. It was one of those things when he caught that touchdown pass, the first one he caught at the first whiteout game, you know, it was like, was that amazing that he caught that pass? And we looked at each other and we're like, you know what? He's been doing that in the backyard for years. Like, he's caught that pass. It just was in our backyard before. So he always had that, you know, kind of going.
Yeah, he was the kid, like, we would yell out and say, all right, Pat, you got to come in for dinner. He's like, all right, there's only like a minute left in the game. He's like, I got to finish the game. There's only like a minute left. And he'd like be keeping time in his head or something like crazy like that. I was like, okay, bud. All right.
Other than sports, what did Pat love to do as a kid?
Oh, boy.
He's always been very social. He likes to hang with friends. He would like to, you know, bike ride around. It was more like hanging out with friends. And honestly, like, when it comes to other interests, he didn't have a ton of other interests because I think he always just wanted to move. He never could sit down and watch a movie. He never wanted to play a board game. Like, that just always frustrated him. He just had to be doing something where he was moving. So, you know, yeah, he'd hang out with friends, or he'd like to go to the beach. But if he went to the beach, it was, he had to be up and he had to be on his boogie board and he just always had to be on the go. So he's interested in playing, but I don't know if he has a lot of other interests besides sports. It's usually something where he can move and compete.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree. Yeah, because it didn't matter really what it was. He had to do something. I mean, he's a little better now, but even now it's like, you know, like during last year, during the quarantine there, like, we would play like Monopoly and stuff as a family. And even then, like, he'd get antsy, like, after, like, he couldn't, like, you know, it'd be an intense game and we'd be playing for like an hour and a half, you know, and all right, I can't do that. I was like, well, bud, you know, sometimes Monopoly can take like a few hours depending on, you know, trades and all that stuff. And I remember there was this one game we were playing, and like, for him to keep going, I had to like bribe Kevin Threlkeld. Like, he wanted to do this deal with me. And I was like, Bat, I'm not giving you these properties. And he's like, well, but he's like, Dad, if you give me these properties, we can keep playing the game. I'm like, all right, I'll tell you what. I was like, you call Kevin Threlkeld. I was like, and if he can guarantee us end seats for this season, I was like, I'll give you these properties. So he called them. And Kevin's like, all right, I'll do it.
Then, of course, it didn't matter. So.
It didn't matter. Yeah, exactly.
At what point as parents did you realize Pat's athletic abilities were better than most?
Well, I don't know that we ever thought this. I mean, I don't know that any parent could honestly look at their, unless they're like crazy arrogant. You know, I don't think they could ever look at their kid when they're younger and say, oh yeah, this kid's going to be like, you know, the first or second round draft pick in the NFL. Like, we never really thought of it. We just kind of take it stage by stage. Like, we always thought he would be a good athlete. Like, even when he was little, he could play with his brother's friends. You know, and he could, like, not play, but like, he could. I remember there was Tim's, what was he, nine?
Yeah. So, and Pat was like five.
Pat was five. And then Tim's baseball team was short on players. So the coach came over and was like, hey, do you mind if Pat plays? And I was like, all right, I don't care, you know, whatever, you know, whatever. And so Pat got in there and he got a hit. He stole a base. He scored a run. You know what I mean? And so, like, but, you know, so we knew that he could, you know, but then we're from Merrimack, Massachusetts. So it's like, you know, we live in a town of 6,000. So it's kind of like, okay, yeah, he's great here, but I mean, there's a whole world out there. You know what I mean? So we just kind of took it step by step. And we're like, okay, bud, you know, you can compete at this level, you compete at this stage. And we just kind of, you know, we've always just been like, you know, we knew he could be good. But it was always just, we never talked about, oh, he could play Division I, or he could play in the NBA, or he could play in the NFL. Like, we never really thought it like that. We just kind of like, all right, here's what you're doing now. You know, do the best you can with it and see where it takes you. You know what I mean? That's kind of always been our mentality with him.
When did he decide football was going to be the path for him?
I think, well, you know what? When he was a sophomore in high school, before he started our public school, and then he transferred to a smaller private school here. When he was a sophomore at Kentucky, which is the public school here, he had a very good football season. It was the season he actually played quarterback, which is interesting. And he had a very, very good basketball season. And when he went, I think at that point, it was one of those things where if you asked him, he probably thought he was a better basketball player than football player. But then when he went to Brooks, where he graduated from high school, I think he started to garner some interest from some bigger college programs. And actually, at the time, my brother was coaching at UMass, and that was his first offer, was from UMass. And then he started to hear from BC, and then as soon as he started to hear from those schools, I think he realized that that was where maybe his talents were, and he was okay with that. And I think if it had gone the other way, he would have been okay with it either, because I think, again, he just really loves to play, and he's always been like that. So I think it was after his, when he first transferred to Brooks and he realized, you know, that he had a talent in football.
Yeah, I would say that. I would agree with that. Yeah, and I think, like, when you look at basketball, I think that, you know, not that he's not committed to doing basketball, but the training is very different. And I don't think he wanted to. I mean, basketball is just nuts with the AAU and all of that. And I think he tried that one year, and I don't think he really wanted to put that investment into it. And he would rather, I mean, what do you got to do to play football? I mean, you got to wait, you know, you got to lift weights, you got to work out, you got to run, you got to, you know, all that stuff. Like, he enjoyed doing those things more than he would have enjoyed doing AU. And I think Diane's right. I think he saw that he saw a better future for himself in football. You know, he could play at the highest. If he followed with basketball, he could probably play Division I, but he's not playing at Duke or he's not playing at North Carolina. And I think he thought football-wise, he could probably play at a higher level.
Diane, you mentioned a few of the bigger name programs that came after Pat. What do you recall about his initial conversation with Penn State?
The first he talked about Penn State, Sean Spencer came to Brooks to kind of like give him the, you know, he couldn't officially meet with him, but kind of give him the look up and down. And he met with the coach, and then he got the invitation to come to the Whiteout camp.
I remember even before that, because her brother and Joe Moorhead are really close. And so I even remember her brother calling us after he ran into Joe Moorhead at the airport. And he was talking to Joe Moorhead, and Joe was like, oh, yeah, you know, they were just talking about recruiting or whatever. And Joe's like, yeah, we're looking at this kid up by your way. He's this weird last name. He's like this Fryerman's kid or whatever. And her brother was like, yeah, that's my nephew. So then he called us and told us that story. So we're kind of like, wow, that's pretty interesting. And then, you know, but at that stage, it's kind of like these coaches are looking at all kinds of kids. So we're kind of like, all right, yeah, whoop-de-doo, Penn State, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then the other things
Sean Spencer. And then he got an invitation to the Whiteout camp. And Coach Ronnie said, we want you to come this night, not that one, you know, if you could come this night. So we got in the car and we drove to Penn State. And for us, I mean, the biggest college football around here is BC, and no disrespect to BC, but, you know, we drive in and you just see this, and you turn the corner, there's nothing but cornfields, and then you see this enormous stadium, and we're just like, wow. And the first time we went to Penn State, John and I were like, oh, I hope he comes here. Like, we loved it. You know, he was at practice and watching practice, and we had gone to the creamery, and we were just kind of sitting there and we're eating ice cream, and we're like, oh, I'm going to be really sad if this is the last time we're here. So,
yeah,
and then he was like, I love it here.
Yeah. And then you remember Mike Villagrana.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we got there earlier than expected. We got there the day before the camp, whatever. And I was like, well, Pat, you know, we're outside Beaver Stadium. I was like, why don't you just call someone up there? Maybe they can come down and just talk to us, whatever. And of course, he has a Notre Dame shirt on. And I was like, but you can't wear that shirt. He's like, all right, Dad. He's like, well, let's just, I was like, we got to put on a different shirt. But so he called, and like Mike came right down. And we hopped on a cart, and he zipped us all around through. It was during the Arts Festival.
Yeah.
And he zipped us all around campus. And like from that, like, I was really impressed with that. Like the fact that, you know, this guy, you know, we showed up unexpected, and he's dropping everything to come down and show us, give us a, impromptu tour of campus. Like, that was pretty impressive. And so, like, and then we did that, and we were kind of like, yeah, geez, I hope he picks Penn State. Because then it was close enough for us that we could drive to, you know what I mean? So, and then see the game. So, yeah. So it was, yeah.
When he decided on Penn State, John, what was your immediate reaction?
Well, he at first, so after the camp, we, because at that point, like, he hadn't even gotten an offer yet. Like, we met with Coach Franklin after that camp. And that first camp, and he was like, all right, he's like, we got to figure out what we're going to do with you. And we were kind of like, okay. And then that was it. We'll call you in a couple of days. Come to find out, because of Pat's age, like, they were kind of trying to figure out if they could get him in earlier, you know, so like he would be in like Yitor's class or something like that.
Because he had repeated
a year of high school. And then they realized, like, Brooks wasn't going to go for it. So that was not an option. So then he was kind of bumming. He's like, oh, they're not going to want me now because they wanted me for that earlier class. And I was like, well, but let's just see how it plays out. And then Coach Franklin was great. He was like, we definitely want you. He's like, you know, so her brother made the suggestion and was like, look, if these schools really want you, call them and ask them if you can go visit one of their preseason practices. Because if they say yes to that, that means they really want you. So we did. So we reached out. He reached out to Coach Ronnie, and Coach Ronnie was like, absolutely. He's like, you can come whatever day you guys can come. So we ended up going to Syracuse, and then we drove from Syracuse down to Penn State, and we visited both places in August during their preseason. And then he was down to, like, those two, because those two, like, he really liked Dino Babers at Syracuse. He really liked that situation at that time. And then so we got to Penn State, and he really liked Penn State. So he's like, well, Dad, what do you think I should do? And I was like, well, bud, I'm like, I know, you know, like, we grew up and, like, Penn State was like Alabama. It is now, right? I mean, Penn State was major college football. They were in the hunt for the national title every year. So we're like, well, bud, I'm like, you know, Penn State football is great. It looks like Coach Franklin's bringing them back on the map. I was like, you're going to get a great education. I was like, you're going to have great resources when you're done here. I was like, it's close enough where we can drive to the games and we're going to see you play. I was like, I mean, it's a no brainer for us, you know, but it's your decision. You got to do whatever you got to do. He's like, yeah. He's like, I think I want to come here. So it was like 10:30 at night, and he's calling the Syracuse coach. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go to Penn State. And he called Coach Franklin or Coach Ronnie. And he's like, yeah, I want to come to Penn State. And Coach Franklin's like, great. He's like, be in my office at 6 a.m. the next morning before you go home. So we got up and we went into the office, and all the coaches are around and they're, you know, clapping, and, you know, it was weird. It was surreal, you know, but it was pretty cool. Yeah.
Whoa, 6 a.m. You're going back into Coach Franklin's office. What was special about that moment?
Well, go ahead. You can take this.
we went into his office and he, you know, he gives you, Coach Franklin is great. And he, you know, he gives you the whole spiel about, you know, what he thinks commitment means, and goes through the whole thing about, you know, it's more than dating and, you know, we're engaged now kind of thing. And are you really sure this is what you want to do? And he gets more explicit about what his expectations are and that whole thing. And once you have that very frank conversation, then, you know, we committed. And I mean, it was exciting, you know, it was great. I mean, I think about it now and it's like, wow, I can't believe it was that long ago, but it seems like just yesterday.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, and it was really cool too, because I thought it was a nice touch, because Coach Franklin, obviously, Pat's grandfather passed away back in May. Well, May of last, it'll be a year in May, and they were really close. I mean, he was the guy that, like, you know, when we're ready to strangle him, like, he's picking him up at practice. Like, he drove him. He would go to every single one of his youth football practices. Like, he was retired. He had nothing to do. So he would take his lawn chair, go to youth football practice, sit there, watch the practice, and bring Pat home every practice. High school, before he could drive, every practice. So, like, he was the guy that kind of took the edge off. You know what I mean? And so that was pretty hard for Pat to lose him. And he wrote him notes before every game at Penn State. You know what I mean? So it was a really nice touch that when he committed, that Pat called his grandfather and Coach Franklin talked to him and told him, you know, that Pat had committed and stuff. So I thought that was a really nice touch.
Wow. I appreciate you guys sharing that story. I know it's not easy. And as Pat alluded to on the Pro Day live stream, it hasn't been easy for him to not receive those notes, but I'm sure up above, he's watching down. He's going to send Pat some good thoughts on draft day. Switching topics just a bit, as Pat's parents, what's your fondest memory of his time at Penn State? Diane?
Well, there's a ton. I mean, and we just had so much fun with our family and friends the whole time. I know it's not, all the times at Penn State were great, and the whiteout, I mean, for me, I know it was the first touchdown he scored at Illinois was, it was the most unathletic thing, although John will say it was very athletic because he knew enough to pick his knee up.
Yep.
It was the most unathletic, ugliest touchdown ever, but it was beautiful. I mean, for us, it was right in front of us.
Yeah, we were right in that end zone.
We were right where our seats were right in that end zone. It was literally right in front of us. We were sitting right behind Jonathan Holland's parents, and we were just like praying the whole time for it to be a touchdown. And it was, and it was just great because he was right there. So, I mean, for me, that was probably when all is said and done, to me, that will stick out the most.
Yeah. I would say from a football, the whole experience was pretty cool just from us, you know, these were all kind of like little retirement trips for us, you know, like you go to the city, you plan it out where we're going to eat. We're going to go to the brewery, you know, like we went to some fantastic breweries, restaurants, you know, and we just enjoyed the experience of it. You know what I mean? Like we went to when they played at Ohio State, you know, the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
The movie Shawshank, right? All right. So that film was done in the Ohio State Reformatory, which is like an hour from Columbus. So we got there, we took like the day off, Friday off, we flew out early and we drove up there and we did a tour of the prison. And we saw like where they made Shawshank Redemption. It was really cool. So like we tried to do it, like, cause we're both history teachers. So we try to like incorporate some of that stuff into the trip. So all of that was good. From a football standpoint, honestly, like one of the memories that sticks out, well, two of them, is the very first game against Appalachian State when it went into, what is it, double overtime or something like that. And I just remember like two things in that game, like after that game was over and we just looked at each other, we're like, are you friggin' kidding me? I was like, we have to do this every weekend for the next 12 weekends. I'm like, you know, like we're exhausted now. And then after that game was over, just like that picture of him running to the end zone, like when Amani got that interception, and just him running there. And there's a picture of him when he was a sophomore in high school, and they played at where the University of Lowell, they in their facility in Lowell, Massachusetts. It's like the next step to get to the semifinals. So it's like a pretty big deal. And they won, and he has this picture where he's like running with his arms up, and it's like the exact same pose.
Oh, they're right there.
Oh, they're right here. I'll show you.
It's funny. We have it in a frame that you flip.
So this is the picture when he was in high school. All right. And then this is the one from App State. So like, you know what I mean? So like that to me, like, and he played like a few downs, but whatever, but like that, like that's where I like that enthusiasm and that imagination, like he keeps that, you know what I mean? So that stood out. And the other thing that stood out was not even during the season. I just remember we had before his sophomore year for picture day in August, and we're going into the stadium. And I'll never forget it. And like the players are walking in, we're walking in, and like he hugs one of the State College police officers. You know, and I'm walking, I'm like, who does that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I thought, like, I just kind of took a step back, and like Pat takes time and stops and like gives him a hug. And I just thought, like, that's really nice. You know, like, you know, I just thought that was really nice. That kind of stuck out to me just from a character standpoint, you know.
Where does he get his high character background?
Tell me. No,
I don't know. I think it's
a combination. I think we just have, we talk about this all the time that, you know, it takes a village. And I mean, I'd like to think we've done a good job parenting because we have three really good kids, or at least we think they're really good kids. But, you know, it's the other influences in our families. And it's also the coaches that he's had, the people that have surrounded him have been good. And that's been teachers and coaches at all levels, you know, and you can go back to elementary school and, you know, in coaches that he had in youth sports and up to now, you know, and with parenting, they say, you know, it takes a village, and it's true. I mean, I think he's just, he's wise enough to take things from people along the way, you know, and I think that's going to benefit him throughout life. You know, he's just kind of pieced it all together.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and like we teach, and he's been around school with us, and, you know, we're very friendly with the custodians, and we're very friendly with the secretaries, and we're, you know, like we're just friendly to people. And I think he sees that. And it's like, you know, and if he gets out of line, on the occasion he gets out of line, you bring the hammer down and you say, hey, look, you can't do that, you know? And so it's a little bit of both of that, especially with Pat. Like, there's a lot of times when he was a kid, like, you know, you had to kind of, you know, get on him a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, he was that kind of kid. Like, he would drive you crazy to the point where you just kind of be like, bud, you can't do that, you know? And then it's a teaching moment, but you gotta, you know, it's a hard, some lessons were harder than others for him.
When he got hurt this season, it was like the first time he ever missed a game, that kind of thing. And I, after, with one of the interviews, and I believe it was with you. And after, I said to him, you're not telling you, that wasn't the truth. And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, you don't remember fifth grade. and he said, what do you mean? And it was an occasion that he got a little out of line with me. He flipped me the bird, actually, when I turned my back and John saw it, and he had to sit out half of the first, at first it was going to be his whole game, but then the coach talked to us and he had to sit out the first half of one of his games when he was playing football in fifth grade. So he did sit a game for discipline at one point.
I said to the coach, I was like, look, here's what he did. I was like, he's not playing today. And the coach was like, well, come on now. You know what? Maybe. I was like, this to me is more important than a fifth grade football game.
So hopefully it paid off.
I would say it paid off all right. As Pat was deciding to declare for the NFL draft or return to Penn State for another season, what was challenging about those conversations from your eyes, John?
Part of it was the fact that he got hurt, and then it's like, okay, well, what could you know? Obviously, the degree thing was what we want him to get his degree, you know, but I mean, you got to look at the opportunity you have. And you got to look at, I think that, you know, you look at what else could he have done if he came back to Penn State? You know what I mean? Like, is there something else you could accomplish going back to Penn State? You know, like, he played 3 years there. He had one of the best careers for a tight end in that school's history. You know, like, what else could you do? You know what I mean? And so at the end of the day, it's like, you know, other than trying to go for the Mackey Award or something like trivial like that. I mean, there wasn't else. And I think he, like, from a maturity standpoint, if you look at his age, I mean, he's going to be 23 in October. So it's like, okay, well, if you look at the shelf life of an NFL player, you know what I mean? The average lifespan is 3 years. So you kind of have to, you know, you got to look at your body. You got to look at your age. You got to look at what you've already accomplished. And it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, you kind of have to do it. You know, you got to take a gamble. It looks like you're going to get picked in a spot where you're going to make a team. You're going to contribute, you know, and you're going to make some decent money when you know, right off the bat, and you know, and you're going to be older. So you got to take advantage of it when you can. You know what I mean?
When Pat's name is called on draft night, Roger Goodell walks across the stage, makes his way to the podium, and says, "With the so-and-so pick, the 2021 NFL draft, Team X selects from Penn State University, Pat Freiermuth." What will be significant about that moment?
I don't know if you can put that into words. I think it will be special because it is kind of unique, you know, that we can be here, that they're doing this whole thing from home now, which is kind of, we loved it last year watching it.
Yeah.
I think it will be special. We'll be here. You know, Pat has kind of handpicked the people that are going to be here Thursday and Friday. And those are the people that have helped him along the way. And I just think that he's going to the NFL, but I think he's wise enough to know that everybody here has contributed in some way. And I just think it's going to be special I don't know. I think it's going to be pretty amazing.
It's almost too surreal to think about. It's like when we're going to all these stadiums when he was playing at Penn State, and it's kind of like, all right. And then you, like, you know, there'll be some night in the summer and you're sitting out at the fire pit having a couple beers, and you're just kind of like, what the hell did we just do? You know what I mean? You're kind of like, geez, are these people, like, there are people that dream of going to the shoe, or they dream of going to the big house. And it's like, we've been there and we've been here, we've been there, you know? And it's crazy. And I guess for me, it's kind of like, you know, you on those nights, it's like you look around and it's like, you know, growing up and you've seen all of these stories of these kids from small town America who made it big. And it's like, now that's us. And that's Pat. And that's pretty cool. You know, that you know, he came from this little dinky town in northern Massachusetts. Like that's pretty cool. You know,
we have to end on this. Why are you proud of your son, Pat Freiermuth?
I am proud of my son, Pat, because he has a vision and he has goals that he wants to achieve. And he does the work to do those goals, to achieve those goals. And he treats people the right way. And he goes about his business the right way. And that is probably the thing I'm most proud about. He keeps things humble. He keeps working hard and he treats people with respect. And how can you not root for a kid like that?
I'm proud of him for a lot of things. I'm proud of how much he's grown up, especially since he's gone to Penn State. And I'm really proud of the way that he takes the time to call his parents and his brother and his sister. And I just hope he never forgets where he came from. So,
if that doesn't get your heart tugging a little bit, I'm not sure whatever will. John and Diane Freiermuth, really appreciate them stopping by on this episode of the Unraveled Podcast. Two incredibly proud parents of their son, Pat Freiermuth, who is about to achieve his dream of playing in the NFL. Stay tuned to GoPSUSports.com as well as Penn State football's social handles leading up to the NFL draft for plenty more coverage surrounding Pat and the rest of the draft-eligible individuals. Until next time, you've been listening to the Unraveled Podcast.